Turning in your Bible to 1 Peter chapter 2. How appropriate those words were. He took my sins and my sorrows and made them his very own. He did that because he is a servant. Can I have a hymn book? Because he is a servant, he was willing to take, thank you, Mike, a servant's place. We have been studying in this book of 1 Peter some very, very important things for our lives. We're now in the section that deals with our duty, and last week we talked about our duty to the state and civil government around us. The duty that we have as Christians to do what? Obey. To respectfully obey those who are in authority over us. And we're starting this morning in the 18th verse of chapter 2 with a section that may seem not very appropriate to people in the United States of America in 1982. For the slaves, we say, have been emancipated, and there are no more slaves. That better not be true. For God has called us all to have a servant's heart. I would like you, if you will, to take just a moment while you have 1 Peter 2 now open. Hold your finger there and go back with me to Matthew, the 11th chapter of Matthew. Matthew 11. Now, I don't know whether you've ever heard these words, but it has been said, I am the master of my own fate and the captain of my soul. No one will tell me what to do. Have you ever heard that? Maybe you didn't hear it in those words, but have you ever heard that attitude? I am the captain of my own soul, the master of my own fate. No one will tell me what to do. That is an attitude that leads to destruction. In the 28th verse of Matthew 11, Jesus started saying something that we need so desperately to hear as far as attitude is concerned. He said, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my what? Take my yoke. You know what a yoke is? A yoke is an instrument that they used to use in those days to hitch two horses together. They would put both of the horses' necks in this common instrument, and then, saddling the strength of both animals into one yoke, two horses would pull like one. They would have two horsepower. They would have two animals yoked together and made one. Jesus said, come to me, you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you what? I will give you rest. Now, how do you get rest? Jesus is saying that the way for you to get rest is not to stop doing anything, but it's to stop doing it alone. Come on, do you see this? Jesus isn't saying quit. He's saying come to me. If you're weary and heavy laden, and get in a yoke with me. Now, the best part's still to come. He says, take my yoke upon you, and what's the next word? Learn. Now, circle that word. See, that's all you have to do when you're in yoke with Jesus. He does the work. You do the learning. That's all he wants you in yoke for. Believe me, Jesus isn't trying to get you in the yoke with him because he needs your help so badly. Come on. Have you ever really tried to help the Lord? You know, you said, now I see that the Lord isn't doing so good. I'm going to help him out on this one. Huh? Did you ever do it? You rolled up your sleeves and you went to work and said, now. And then all of a sudden, what did you find you had done? Made a mess. That's right. That's what it usually is. We make such a mess. And then we say, Lord, would you take these broken pieces and put it back together, please? Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am what? Gentle. What does King James say? Meek and humble or lowly in heart. Now, please notice what the Lord is trying to teach you, and you might want to write it in your margin. The reason he wants to get us in yoke with him is he wants to change our attitude. When I get in yoke with Jesus, my attitude changes. Jesus said, learn from me, for I am gentle and humble, meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find what? Rest for your souls, underscore souls. What is a soul? Your intellect, emotions, and the will. That's where you get rested when you're in yoke with Jesus. You rest your mind, you rest your emotions, and you rest your will, because he sure makes it easy to make choices once he's in control. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Okay, so the Lord is trying to deal with servants. He is trying to make a servant out of you. Now go back with me, please, to verse 18 of 1 Peter 2. Let me read the eight. Well, let me just go on one little step further before I read. There was a lot of things written in the scripture to servants, and I think that may be confusing to people. I felt this point of information should be made. Somebody is bound to say, well, that's because more servants were attracted to Jesus than anybody else. That's not true. People were attracted to Jesus of all financial and social strata. But there was so much written to servants in those days because there were so many. Hear this, if you will, please. In the Roman Empire alone, and you might want to make note of this somewhere, this fact amazed me as I did some research on servants in the days of Christ. In the Roman Empire alone, at the time that Peter wrote this epistle, there were 60 million slaves. That is one-third, that is practically one-third our current population in this nation. 60 million slaves in the Roman Empire. So they needed help. They needed a lot of help. Let me tell you a few things about slaves in those days. Slaves were treated like animals. Really, that some slaves were even branded by their master's brand. They were kept in filthy barracks, usually, and they had absolutely no legal rights of their own. They were not allowed to marry, though they were allowed to cohabit with those of the opposite sex, and I'm sure you've already figured the reason for that. So that then the offspring were never known who they really belonged to, and the reason being that they belonged to the master. And he owned all the slaves that were born. He had the right of life and death over every one of his slaves, and you can imagine they were a very unhappy and militant group of people. History tells us that there was a period right during this time when 50,000 slaves rose up and became militant to overthrow their masters. They started to rampage through the land. They were looting, and they were murdering, and they were totally uncontrollable, and it took the Roman army several years to subdue them. And the things that they were saying were these: how can I throw off this yoke of oppression that's on me? How am I supposed to respond to my master? And please know that even the Christian slaves were saying this. How should I respond to my master? What can we do? Now, it was in this kind of an atmosphere that Peter wrote this epistle. And I want you to start now with that understanding, reading the 18th verse. And I want to ask you, do you think these were welcome words? Listen what he says. Slaves, submit yourselves to your masters with all respect. Do you think they were welcome words? No, I don't think so. Not to many slaves. Please hear. He even goes further. He says, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. Now, may I just interject something here? Before I say what I'm going to say, I want to ask, how many people here today work for an employer? Would you hold your hands up? Hold them up so we can all see. Hold them up way up high. Let's look around if you want to. How many people here work for an employer, all right? Know this, if you will. Your employer buys 40 hours, at least, of your life every week. And during those 40 hours, we literally are our employer's servant. Now, I know that there's a lot of people who do not have that attitude today. And there's no way that they are going to adopt that attitude. But I believe that a Christian should have the attitude, my boss deals justly with me. He has agreed to pay me so much for 40 hours of my life in which I am to serve him and give him my best. Now, with that attitude in mind, let's go on one more time, read that 18th verse. I want to go over it one more time. Slaves, submit. Take the words carefully. Submit yourselves to your masters with all respect. I think that probably one of the greatest lacks of our day is respect. The Southerners, even though a lot of them may do it only because of the way they were trained as lip service, yet there is something so gentle about their wordage when they say, sir and ma'am, because those words do convey an attitude of respect. And I've been looking at my own heart, and I've been looking into my own heart as I have studied this week, and I've been saying, Lord, I want you to deal with my heart, not my head. You see, if God can only get through to our head, it's not going to last long. But if he can get through to a heart attitude here, it will change the way we live for the rest of our life. Submit to your master with all respect, not only to those that are good and considerate, but to those who are harsh. You know what he's saying here? I don't want you to be submissive outwardly only. I want you to be submissive inside. Let's go on, if you will. Just before we leave this thought, though, before I go to the next verse, may I ask you to turn back with me to the book just in front of this one, James Chapter 5. For I felt that it would be wrong for me to leave this subject without saying a word to employers. There are so many words and attitudes spoken to employees, but there's something that written here to employers, and I thought we should just take a look at it quickly. James chapter 5, verse 4, beginning. Look, the wages that you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvester have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. Now, what God is saying in this fifth chapter of James, employers, pay your employees properly. Do not fail to pay them and treat them properly. It works both ways. All right, let's go on now. Back to the second chapter of Peter and beginning at verse 19. We told you when we started this subject that we would be talking to you about suffering. All right, hear what is said now in these next two verses. For it is commendable if a man bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because he is conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable where? Before God. Did you see that? God says, if you suffer in this life for doing good, there is a special blessing that I am going to have waiting for you in that day when I settle all accounts. It's possible for you to scream your head off when you suffer and you deserve it. Won't say anything about that. That brings a lot of thoughts to my mind. But we'll just pass on and say, you know, if we get suffering that we have earned, we really ought to keep our mouths still and accept that because we earned it. But if you suffer and you've done good, if you can have the same attitude, don't shoot off at your mouth, but quietly in submission to God say, Lord, you promised me in the second chapter of Peter a special blessing if I would take suffering when I didn't deserve it, and so I take it to the glory of God. What does that bring to your spirit? Peace, yes. Something else.